From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
My next guests have been important figures in jazz for many, many years. Junior Mance is a pianist, composer, and musical director who's made over 30 albums under his own name and has been an accompanist on countless others. And Bernard Pretty Purdy has played drums behind some of the biggest names in jazz, in addition to being the session drummer of choice for everyone from Aretha Franklin to the Rolling Stones. And Mr. Mance and Mr. Purdy are also teachers at the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music. As part of the school's 20th anniversary celebration, they will be performing tonight, starting at 7:30 at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola Jazz at Lincoln Center. That's at Broadway at 60th Street on the fifth floor. And I'm pleased that it has brought Junior Mance and Bernard Purdy to my show today. Hello.
Hello.
Now, you were both already well-known musicians before you became teachers. What led you to also want to teach? I'll begin with you, Junior, because you're the elder statesman here.
That's right.
I didn't say it now, so don't blame me.
Oh, I admit it.
It's in the books.
Proud of it. Yeah. No, actually, I had no intention of becoming a teacher, but the founders of the school, Arne Lawrence and Chico Hamilton, sort of twisted my arm, got me drunk one night, mm-hmm. and then told me, well, try it. If you don't like it, after a couple of weeks, we'll understand.
So you've been there since the beginning?
Practically, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the same for you, Bernie?
Yes, I was there at the beginning, and he did twist my arm.
And a drummer, that can really be dangerous.
He grabbed me, and Chico was about to beat me. So I said, okay, all right, I'll come.
It was funny, though. They told me, like, try it for a week or two, and I tried it for the first day. I loved it, and I've been there 18 years now.
Well, the New School approach is artist as mentor. And isn't that the way musicians used to learn in the past? They didn't learn in an academic way. They would join a band, and other musicians would tell them, give them ideas as to how to improve the way they play.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Which is the way that I teach now, after even the 18 years I've been there, yeah.
You're teaching the same way that people taught you when you were coming up?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's two of us.
Uh-huh.
But well, I get in trouble with mine.
Why is that?
Because the young people that I have, because they look at R&B as a different thing, they don't realize that it's not about taking a test at the end of the semester. You've got to learn this as you're going along. Because if you don't, you're going to be definitely left behind because you're not going to understand the concept of working together with a group.
And the ultimate test is really when you're playing with other musicians and it either works or it doesn't work.
Exactly.
Well, so have you been able to maintain your other careers all the time that you're
doing
this?
Oh, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can't afford not to.
And I assume teachers always tell me that they actually learn from their students at times.
I do. I decided early in the teaching thing that it's a two-edged sword. The students don't know it, but I'm learning as much as they are. Because the students that come in who are auditioned, they're all like, and it's getting to be of higher caliber each year. You know, some of them are coming in professional quality, and I'm listening to what they're doing, too. Mm-hmm. It boils down to they want to know where I've been, and I want to know where they're going.
And the important thing is to help them get to the point where they can become distinctive musicians with their own sounds.
Right, yeah.
Which is something you must have thought about when you started.
I did, yeah.
And you, Mr. Purdy?
Just slightly different. Same, but so much of mine, what I have to do, boils down to attitude. The attitude of the student is what's going to get them across, because for me, I also try to teach them the business and how to make money, how to survive in the business. Because you don't have to do this at the end of the semester, do your text to pass your lesson. It's not about that. It's about building a rapport with your fellow musicians so you learn how to play together, to stay together, to be part of something that can make things work for you. Reading, writing, composing, the learning, the playing, which is so important, and the business. And I try to give it all within the 13 weeks.
And is that something you would have liked, Junior, somebody telling you how to survive in this business? Because I'm sure there were times when you thought, well, gee, maybe I should do something else for a while.
I have never done anything else, and I really never wanted to, because I got into playing professionally very early in life.
You were 17 or so, weren't you?
That's when I joined Gene Ammons. I started working professionally when I was 15.
So you grew up in Chicago, or the Chicago area, where there was a lot of jazz anyway, and Gene Ammons was one of the kings
at
the time. So Gene Ammons taught you, do you think that you've always had a kind of a bluesy style? Do you think that that comes directly out of the fact that you began with Gene Ammons?
Well, not exactly.
No.
Because his father...
Well, let him answer that you can go.
His father was one of my idols, because I started out playing nothing but the blues.
Thank you. His father was a great pianist.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
He's one of the top boogie-woogie pianists. Yeah. But I sort of gravitated towards the jazz genre before that, but I wasn't thoroughly into it. I was still into the blues a lot. You know, and in fact, when I was 15, most of the bands were basically blues bands. Mm-hmm.
But you came along at a time, transitional period in jazz, when the young musicians were listening to the innovations of people like Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and Bud Powell. How long was it before you even were aware
that this other thing was coming?
That
came later for me, too, because, let's say at 15, Bird hadn't come along yet. I'm 78 now.
Mm-hmm. But by the time you were playing professionally with Gene Ammons, 47 or so, you were already, Bird was already around.
Yes, he was around, but not where I would pay a lot of attention to him then. Hmm. But I met him while I was playing with Gene Ammons. He used to come and sit in with Gene, because Gene knew him. Gene was a few years older than myself. Gene was in the Billy Eckstein band, where Bird played for a short time. And we worked in a club called the Congo Lounge in Chicago, which was right next door to the Regal Theater. This was a theater something like the Apollo. They had nothing but bands come in. Mm-hmm. And their day ended, between 10 and 11 at night. In Chicago, the hours for clubs were, say, 9 to 4, 5 on Saturdays in the morning, you know. Mm-hmm. And they would finish, and they would come down to our club, which is right next door, and sit in. And that's where I met all of those guys, all of the beboppers, and that's what...
And you had to learn to keep up with them.
I wanted to learn to keep up with them.
Now, Bernard Purdy, some of your earliest work was with carnival and circus bands. Was that just that's where the work was?
No, it had nothing to do with the work. Whatever came along in the area, because I'm still a little country boy, and I still had to go to school, so whatever came in the area of Maryland, I gravitated to. It didn't matter. Country music, blues music, carnival music, circus music, it always came through, because we were the Mecca. Cecil County is where everything came, because it was like Trenton. You know, you're thinking in terms of where the political thing is. Well, Elkton and that Cecil County was where all the music came.
Was that a good preparation for you as a sideman? Because drummers have to adapt to whatever group they're in. Unless they become leaders, they just play what the person who has the group tells them he wants.
So the thing with drummers, at that particular time, drummers were getting ideas from guys like Cozy Cole and Louis Belson. You know, we felt, no matter what, that being a sideman, we were also a leader, because that's how we were taught. You take the group and you move the group wherever you want them to go. That is your job. It was always a job. You follow and you lead.
Well, you wound up becoming one of the most popular sidemen in popular music. How did that happen? Is it because you grew up, you went to the music business around the time that rock and roll was gaining popularity?
Yes, rock and roll was becoming very popular. But I got lucky with people like Mickey and Sylvia.
Were you on Love is Strange?
Yes, but I was on the remake. See, the thing that happened that people didn't know, the business side, that Love is Strange, when it came out in 1955, was a pretty good hit. But Love is Strange became a mega hit in 61, 62. And it was owned by Sylvia Robinson herself with her own record label and her own business. She was the one now owning everything because it was their song.
Now, you were playing a lot of rhythm and blues and rock and roll over those years. Did you also try to keep up playing jazz?
Oh, you'd have to play whatever came along. Jazz, to me, was the big band. Say, I started playing big band at the age of 8. So whenever someone called me to do that, I was glad to do it. So I didn't have any problem just jumping over into the jazz part. My hardest part was not to be a big band drummer with a small group, 4 or 5-piece band. And that was a little hard on me. And the guy who helped me and really straightened me out was Billy Cobb. So we started exchanging and teaching each other. I was teaching him the funk and the rhythm of laying back, and he was teaching me how to play and use the cymbal as a ride and not get in the way of the rest of the band, and the small band especially.
Now, tonight at this concert, you'll be leading separate bands.
Yes.
Yours, Junior, is the New School Blues Band, which means that it'll be jazz, but it'll be blues-oriented?
Yes, it'll be a blues show. It'll be my blues vocal class.
Mm-hmm.
I have about
You teach vocal as well?
I can't teach them how to sing. I can't carry a tune in a wheelbarrow when it comes to singing.
Yeah.
No, but I'm teaching them mostly the emotions or the feelings, the phrasing of singers.
Well, you backed up some pretty good singers like Dinah Washington and Joe Williams and the like, so you probably learned a bit just sitting there and playing behind them.
That's right, I did, yeah.
And Bernie Purdy, you'll be leading at the R&B review.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be a very different kind of a thing. It'll be more rhythm and blues, less jazz?
Yes, be more rhythm and blues. Not necessarily less jazz, because the solos are always going to be jazzy against the rhythm. That's the whole idea of trying to capture and keep the jazz alive itself, to keep that freedom over rhythm. And that's a little hard for them to understand, but I'm also trying to show them that it can work and you can still make money with it.
And that's important. You got to keep on putting bread on the table. My two guests are Bernard Purdy, Pretty Purdy, and Junior Mance, and tonight they will be performing at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola Jazz at Lincoln Center on Broadway at 60th Street. We will listen to a little bit of Bernie Purdy now and come back with more. It's Junior Mans playing Blue Monk. Junior Mans will be performing tonight at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, along with Bernard Pretty Purdy, and they will both be, well, I guess they'll be with musicians from the school.
All students.
And the performances start at 7:30 with Junior's Blues, with the New School Blues Band, coming on later at 9:30. For tickets and information, you can call 212-229-5896 or go to jazznewschool.edu. Junior, your music has made you well-known internationally. Were you aware that Francois Truffaut made mention of you in Shoot the Piano Player, his classic film from 1960?
Not right away, but I was aware of it, yes.
It was interesting how it was used. It's one of the questions that Charles Aznavour asks Marie Dubois to see if she's hip while he's wooing her is, Aimez-vous Junior Mans? And one of the problems was the person who did the title, subtitles, had no idea who you were and wrote Junio M-A-N-S or something.
Right. But
we knew.
Beyond that, when it was released here with subtitles, and done in English, there were several names that were used. It's my name, or I think Earl Garner's and Dave Brubeck. But when it was done here, they eliminated my name, but they put Dave Brubeck and Earl Garner's name in. Never understood, but I never,
Had you played a lot in France at the time?
I had, yeah, on certain tours. I never met Francois Truffaut, yeah.
But I obviously knew you. How did you wind up, Bernard, playing with groups like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones? I understand the R&B work.
Well, the Beatles was, I actually had to re-record and fix. I fixed 21 tracks on them, and that was part of what was going on. As far as the Rolling Stones.
You mean after they had been recorded with Ringo Starr, they brought you in to do some drum parts?
After it was recorded, I can't say that it was recorded with Ringo, because I happen to know that.
You're being very discreet here. Okay, let's allow it.
No, well, the it's curtain. Not that. It's I'm really supposed to really shut up about Ringo. It's hard for me because knowing that he wasn't on anything, it's really hard to say anything.
Well, he was not the greatest drummer. Everybody knew, but he was a wonderful personality, and he
was chosen by Brian Epstein because of his personality and his looks. That's what he wanted in the group. And that's what he got, and that's why he's rich today. And I'm not knocking it, but for him to, take his hand out, well, me? Where was I? Well, we know where you were. You were out there making money, but you weren't playing the music. But that's no here nor there. But the same thing with the Rolling Stones. I actually did that at Atlantic Records. I was brought in to fix several of the tracks for the Rolling Stones as well.
And then, of course, you were a regular drummer behind people like Aretha Franklin and Otis Redding, Ray Charles. Those were regular jobs.
That's
meanwhile,
right.
You were being hired to do all this other stuff on the side. And you developed a style that is called funk drumming. How is funk drumming different from other drumming?
Most of it is being laid back and making sure that the backbeat is the prominent factor within it, and taking the other part with the rhythms around it, to whereas what you play on top doesn't interfere with what the backbeat is, whether it's on the music, whether it's behind the music, or whether it's in front of it. But the backbeat is the most dominant factor, so in order to make it sound funky, it's almost played behind the beat. And you try not to do it on a very fast pace, because the faster you do, the less funk that you're going to basically have.
It's got to be kind of like a medium to up-tempo.
It's a medium to up-tempo, but it's a laid-back. And everything around it, if you can keep it interesting with the figures that's going on, especially with the bass, guitar, and the piano, you keep things happening where they can move and they can come up with a counter-rhythm. Well, the backbeat becomes so strong and so dominant, you don't lose anything. So you lift the track, and at the same time, you're behind it just to make sure that it lays right.
And once you establish that, people just called and said, we want Pretty Purdy because he gives that sound?
Well, part of it, the other part was my signs that you've now hired a hitmaker. And
you gave yourself the name Pretty as well?
Oh, not me. When I came to New York, they couldn't pronounce my last name. So they were calling me Bernard Pretty. At first, I took it wrong. But after a while, you know, okay, you can't pronounce my last name. But then within 6 months, people didn't know my first name. So it was, hey, Pretty Purdy. Oh, it rhymes. Hey, Pretty, come here. Come here, Pretty. I want you to play on my date. And that's how Pretty became part of my name.
I understand that you had life-size signs.
My signs.
And said that little old hitmaker, me, Pretty Purdy. I heard about you.
Meanwhile, Junior Mance, nobody knows your first name either.
My name is Julian.
And when you went into the military, you played with another Julian.
Julian Adderley, yeah.
Was that an important time
for you? Very important time for me, because when I was drafted into the military and I wanted to go into the band, but I couldn't because I didn't play a marching instrument. You know, and so I was walking guard duty one night in Fort Knox, Kentucky, where we were stationed, and I was walking around the service club where the service club's where guys go just to relax. And I heard this music from the outside. Mm-hmm. And I said, wow, you know, well, they got to have some great records. I think I'll go and listen during my break. And I went in, and there's this roly-poly guy on the stand with an alto thing. And I was, like, just flabbergasted. Because when I was listening from the outside, I said, it's not Bird, it's not Sonny Stitt. But, it, you know, had the flavor of all of the great alto players. And it turns out that at that time, Cannonball's idol was Sonny Stitt, and I had recorded with Sonny. But anyway, I met them, and I ran up to the stand. I said, gee, you guys are great. Could I sit in? That's something I never do. I always ask to sit in, you know. Mm-hmm. So the piano player, who was a clarinet player in the marching band, he knew what we call those chords. Pinky chords, church chords, you know. So yeah. That's all he knew. And before Cannonball could say a word, this guy reaches down and yanks me up on the stage and says, yeah, man, come on, sit in some. And he disappeared because he had a date in Louisville with a woman he had been trying to get next to for the longest and couldn't, you know. And he left. And I'm sitting there with the, you know, almost in battle gear with a steel helmet and cartridge belt and combat boots, and I'm sitting there, and Cannonball is giving me this disdainful look. So what do we got here? You know, and the guys in the band are looking at me the same way. So Cannonball, I guess he had in his mind, says, oh, well, let's get rid of him quick. Said, all right, man, what do you want to play? So I kind of threw him. I said, well, play something out of your book, you know, which is something only musicians say, you know. So he's thought a bit. It was a big band, too, and so he pulls out a number, which was like a Count Basie number with blues changes, you know, and so they played the head of it, and then after that they said, okay, man, you got it. Now, mind you, I hadn't seen a piano in 6 weeks because I was in basic training with a rifle, you know, and so what did he say that for? I stretched out after about four courses. I didn't want to wear out welcome. You know, I looked. And so the guys didn't have that hateful look. The heads were shaking, fingers were snapping, and toes were popping, you know. And they said, no, man, go ahead, keep going. So I played till my arms almost fell off, you know. And then I said, come on, Cannonball, come on in now, you know. The band came in shouting, you know, at the end of the tune. Cannonball said, hey, man, that was great. What's your name? I said, Junior Mance. He says, if you're Junior Mance, what are you doing here? So I just looked at him and says, what are you doing here?
You know? He knew you by reputation already.
Yeah. So he says, oh, man, great. Are you coming to the band? I said, no. They're training me to go to Korea. So to make a long story short, he tried to fix it. Well, he did fix it so that I could get into the band. I got into the band as the company clerk, which is the guy that just sits in the office all the time and, you know, does the clerical work. So he got me into that, got me out of the training company and into the band, and I only worked, you know, only played with the jazz band or the big band. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have to march at all, but I had to put in one appearance to make it look good, you know. So they gave me a pair of first they gave me a bass drum, and they said, "Now we want you to play this." And then fortunately, it was just more or less a rehearsal where we were playing troops who were coming back from bivouac who were getting ready to be sent over. He said, "All right, man, so when we see him and the drum major gives the signal, you just play this bass drum." Now, it's a windy day on a steep hill, you know. So when the drum major started, I started to beat, and here's where the beat went. Boom, 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 boom. So the cymbal player runs over and says, "Man, give me that bass drum. You're going to have these guys walking in a minute." So he gives him the cymbals. I said, "Well, what do I do with these?" He said, "Just hit them, you know." But he meant like hit them lightly on the beat. And I didn't know. I thought it was like the last chord in the war, 1812 overture. So I just ran back and said, "Bam!" And the troops scattered. You know, looked around. So then the drum major looked at me and says, "Put them under your arm, and if you take them out on a heavy court martial."
And that's why Junior Mance was never a threat to Bernard Purdy when they were looking for drummers. Both of them will be performing tonight at Dizzy's Club Coca-Cola, Broadway at 60th Street. Bernard Purdy and the New School R&B Review will be playing at 7:30, and then Junior Mance will play Junior's Blues with the New York's Blues Band at 9:30. For more information and tickets, you can call 212-229-5896 or go to jazz.newschool.edu. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
<Thank you. laughs>
Goodbye, Joe. We gotta go to your mile. We gotta go for the P-Roll.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.